Coming up on KUCB News, Unalaska's schools and PCR are working to provide after-school programs despite the COVID-19 pandemic. And many of Alaska's commercial salmon fishermen faced a summer of poor fish runs and market impacts. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics, now providing new, used, and refurbished computers, tablets, iPods, MP3s, phones, phone accessories, and flat screens. We also carry external hard drives for your digital storage needs. Redfish Electronics is located in the airport parking lot next to Northport Rentals. Redfish Electronics can be reached at 359-2205.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Hope McKenney with some local news on Thursday, November 19th, 2020. The Unalaska City School District and the PCR are working together to provide after-school programs to aid the social and mental well-being of students during the pandemic. Superintendent John Conwell said at a school board meeting last night that the programs are limited due to challenges posed by social distancing restrictions.
They're needing more space and personnel to safely and effectively conduct after-school programs and activities. Despite the challenges posed by the pandemic, UCSC is still providing a limited menu of after-school activities, including study halls, student clubs, varsity, junior high team sports and practices.
Board member Carlos Tayag expressed concern about the lack of staffing for these programs.
Our staff and teachers may already be exhausted because we're asking them to do a lot in these times, so I think that we really have to be creative, but we really have to also listen to our faculty, our staff, our teachers.
High school representative Natalie Butner suggested enlisting the help of high school students as mentors to relieve some of the added stress on faculty. Conwell also gave an update on the COVID-19 Advisory Committee's meeting from last week. He said that committee members discussed the city and EOC's decision not to move into the high-risk threshold following the announcement of Unalaska's first positive case of community spread of COVID-19. He said that with the decision not to shut down the schools and in consideration of the upcoming holidays, committee member Joni Scott suggested that families be reminded of sick policies and quarantine mandates.
Scott, our preschool teacher, mentioned that she would speak on behalf of teachers, mentioned that she'd like to see a letter go home, families with information about sick policies, health screening, and quarantine. I did just send the letter out, kind of reminding folks about the quarantine.
Finally, Conwell announced his resignation, which will become effective at the end of this school year. In response, board members approved to retain the services of the Alaska Association of School Boards to help in their superintendent replacement search. Many of Alaska's commercial salmon fishermen faced a summer of poor fish runs and market impacts driven by the COVID-19 pandemic. Government relief money has helped fishermen, and the state is finalizing a plan for how to spend another $50 million in federal dollars for the industry. As Alaska Public Media's Abby Collins reports, for some fishermen, it can't come soon enough.
The season was almost a complete loss.
Mike Weber, gill nets for salmon out of Cordova on the Copper River and in Prince William Sound.
The returns numbers were down very low. We were almost a month without a fishing period this year.
Weber sells some of his fish to processors, but a lot of it gets marketed directly to individual customers and restaurants. And while he saw strong individual sales, Weber says he lost about two-thirds of his gross earnings this year compared to 2019. He did get some money from the federal Paycheck Protection Program, but was out fishing and missed the opportunity to apply for other relief money. Dan Lesh is a consultant with McKinley Research Group. He specializes in seafood industry analysis. And he says in terms of harvest, some areas of the state did well.
Salmon, the big story is just how different it was between different regions. Bristol Bay and Kodiak had good years, whereas everyone else pretty much had a really poor year.
According to preliminary data from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, the value of this year's salmon harvest, including all species, was about half of what it was in 2019. The total number of fish harvested was down 44%. Not only were fishermen catching fewer fish, in many cases, they were getting paid less for them. processors faced steep bills from implementing COVID mitigation strategies. Lesh says the value of sockeye was the lowest it's been in more than 10 years. The same goes for chum salmon.
The markets were dramatically impacted by COVID this year, of course, and that did drive prices lower. You saw that restaurant market disappear and just general cost increase for processors.
In May, to help offset these impacts, the federal government allocated $300 million for fisheries assistance in coastal communities through the CARES Act. Alaska got $50 million. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game has been working on a plan for how to spend that money. Rachel Baker is a deputy commissioner with the department.
It has been a somewhat challenging process because there's no, you know, cookbook for how to do this. This is a brand new type of plan, spending plan that we've developed before.
Once the department finalizes the spending plan, it will be reviewed by the Pacific States Marine Fisheries Commission and the federal government. At that point, members of Alaska's fishing industry will be able to apply for funds. That milestone will be a relief for Stacy Corbin, who owns a charter fishing company on the Kenai Peninsula.
I get it that, you know, it's complicated. You've got all different levels of businesses on both sides of it, the commercial and the sport fishing side of it and the charter side of it. But, you know, our bills come due every month. That money's been allocated for quite a while, and we need it now.
Corbin just wrapped up his second difficult season in a row. In 2019, wildfires burned throughout the summer near the Kenai River, disrupting the tourism season. This year, Corbin was surprised by the amount of business he did get. Still, he says he's lost a lot of money.
Despite another season of, you know, coming in terms of about half of normal income, we still were able to operate and stay afloat, and as of now are still able to pay the bills.
Weber in Cordova says he's seen his share of bad years in Alaska's fishing industry.
It was a tough year, but mentally it was tough, and emotionally it was tough, but it came to an end, and we're hunkering down again and working our way through it, and definitely looking forward for 2021 season.
He says he hopes 2021 will be a good year, the kind you use to rebuild your business. In Anchorage, I'm Abby Collins.
Despite a disappointing salmon season and continuous ecosystem-wide change in the Bering Sea, recent pink salmon runs across the region have been much larger than ever before. In what is considered a climate change success story, pink salmon in the Norton Sound region have been thriving after dropping to severely low numbers in the early 2000s. Ed Farley, program manager for the Ecosystem Monitoring and Assessment Program, presented decades of research that indicate that this is caused by the warmer waters.
But the take-home here is that the freshwater to early marine conditions, especially freshwater, are likely driving production, and that warmer appears to be better.
Temperatures in the Bering Sea have been rising for a while, and according to research, the warmer temperatures show no signs of stopping. Sea temperatures have been steadily rising, even leading to periodic heat waves, according to NOAA. This year, sea temperatures were 3 degrees Celsius higher than typical, making 2020 the second lowest minimum sea ice extent on record. With a decrease in sea ice and a diminishing cold pool, pink salmon are one of very few cases where marine life has benefited from warming temperatures. Pink salmon go through a 2-year cycle. After spawning, they spend 1 year in freshwater environments until they are a smolt, then spend a year in marine ecosystems until they have reached adult age. Farley says that warming temperatures in the Bering Sea mean higher metabolism and higher growth rate for salmon, meaning less predation during winter at sea.
Their metabolism is going to be based on temperatures from the sea. So with food and higher temperatures, we expect them to grow faster, and the faster they grow likely helps them reduce predation risk.
Although pink salmon are benefiting from the rise in water temperatures, other species of salmon are not showing the same increase in numbers as pinks. Farley says that more research needs to be done on species like coho salmon to see how both water temperatures and greater numbers of pink salmon may impact them. But for now, it seems that there is little correlation.
I know that we've looked at coho salmon diets, and there doesn't seem to be much overlap with the pink salmon diets. And so as far as, you know, what's happening after they leave that shelf area in the Northern Bering Sea, and if there's any competition after that, I'm not sure. I know that we're trying to look more into coho right now.
The Pink Salmon Juvenile Index will help researchers determine expected numbers for runs next year. Farley says that the Alaska Fisheries Center is performing more research in the near future to determine how these warmer temperatures may impact the runs of other species of salmon. Since late June, Unalaska's Museum of the Aleutians has been publishing a series of Instagram posts about historically and locally significant places on the island. KUCB's Maggie Nelson sat down with museum staff to hear more about these posts and the places in Unalaska that are important to them.
There's a lot of places that I remember which don't have a name. So little like ridges or trails or streams or like all these little places which are easily forgotten or forgotten like the grander picture but are still important and are still places that I remember. So I kind of wanted the series to also reflect that.
That's the museum's education outreach manager, Thomas McClenigan. He says he started the museum's social media places series shortly after arriving on the island this summer. Originally, McClenigan says these posts were a simple way to familiarize himself with the island's history and geography, but it also became a way to discuss and share the lesser known parts of Unalaska with others.
There's this really neat waterfall that's just up the valley. And I know a lot of locals know about it because people go there to hang out. But I don't know if anyone who's not on this island would ever hear about it. So that was the general idea. I wanted to learn about the place I had just arrived. And I also wanted to just highlight the various places of the Aleutians.
But in his first post, McClenigan chose a much more notable landmark.
It was the first piece of Unalaska I ever set eyes on. I was sitting on the left side of the airplane, and in our approach, we were coming down Unalaska Bay going into Captain's Bay. Look out the window, and there's Mount Ballyhoo with the airport and all of the industry around it.
McClenigan says he was immediately interested in Mount Ballyhoo, with everything from its unique shape to its history as part of the Iron Ring of Defenses during World War II to the meaning of its name.
If you just Google Ballyhoo, all sorts of things come up, so like an excited commotion, a fish, a rock band in Maryland.
McClenigan moved to the island in June from North Carolina, where he had just finished his master's in history with a concentration in museum studies. And he says because he moved during the pandemic, he had to quarantine for 2 weeks after arriving. And even after that, because islanders are mandated to socially distance and limit contact with anyone outside of their household, meeting new people has proven difficult. He says he was doing a lot of hiking when he first arrived, and these posts were, in part, a chance for him to share some of his experiences while in isolation. But McClenigan also says that they are an important way of documenting the island as it is now.
We don't know how the island might change over the next 20, 30, 50, 100 years. So I think it's also important just to kind of record some of these really cool places as they exist now.
Overall, McClenigan hopes that these social media posts will inspire other community members to reach out and share their own favorite places on the island. In Unalaska, I'm Maggie Nelson.
This is part one of an ongoing series. Tune in next week to hear more from MOTA Interim Collections Manager, Dr. Kale Bruner. And for more information on how to contribute your own local place to possibly be featured on the museum's Instagram, email education@aleutians.org. Again, that's education@aleutians.org. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Hope McKenney, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.